Hi there, and welcome to this episode of A Couple Takes on MS. Hi, I'm Dan Digman.
And hi, it's me, Jennifer Digman.
And we're A Couple Takes on MS. I'm walking.
I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward. This really, and Jennifer, if you've been counting, but this is a really special episode for us because it's our 100th episode of A Couple Takes on MS. Can you believe we made it this far?
No, yeah. I can't. And just, yes, we're at 100. It's gone quickly, but we're here.
We are here. And Jennifer and I had thought about, you know, who we wanted to share this moment with. And we were thinking 100th episode. And it came back to someone really who was there at the very beginning for us after we launched our blog. And just, you know, and it's somebody who really helped us to find our voice and really encouraged us to keep going. So we are so blessed and excited to welcome Kathy Chester to the episode today. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Jen. So happy to be here. You know what avid fan I am of both of you, separately and together. So thanks for having me.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here, Kathy. And I think, you know, for anybody who doesn't know who Kathy is, Kathy was diagnosed with MS back in 1986, and she's been a powerful voice in the MS community ever since, long before there were treatments or even an online space to connect. She's a certified health advocate, patient leader, and the creator of the award-winning blog An Empowered Spirit, where she's inspired and educated countless people living with MS, including Jennifer and me, and her work has been featured across major health platforms. And she's been recognized with a Lifetime Achievement Award from a social health network. But most importantly to us, she's been a very dear friend and someone who has, as we said before, has helped us to find our voice in this space. And Kathy, you know, 1986, I mean, so truly then this is, what specific date in 86 do you remember?
You know, everybody talks about their anniversary, but I really didn't think about it back then because I didn't know anybody else at MS. We didn't talk about it, but I know it was in December sometime. I just talk about it the whole year of it being the year of such and such anniversary. Yeah.
And Dan and I were wondering, he and I were quite young when we were diagnosed, as I imagine you, when you were. And you have a family. Where were you in life when you were diagnosed?
So, like so many other people, I actually started having symptoms when I was 21, right after college graduation. But being young and naive and ignorant, ignoring all the symptoms until 1986, when my feet got numb and I started getting all kinds of symptoms. And luckily, the blessing of it, besides my wonderful parents, was I had a great boyfriend who was very devoted to me. And I gave him the chance to leave because I knew that, you know, the unknown of MS, which I had no idea what it was. There was no internet and no books. And he chose to stay, and thankfully, we've been married since 1988. So that's where I was. Yeah, so I was really, that's a blessing. I mean, that's a true blessing to have had him as my boyfriend, and then, yeah.
And your husband now.
My advocate. Yeah.
And congratulations. Yeah, Kate, that's wonderful. So I just wanted to kind of put us back in that space that you were young, like so many of us now, who are diagnosed, and that's proof positive that you can have longevity with this disease.
And you can, and like I said so many times over the years, there were no medications. There was steroids or nothing. They told me to give up my job. I was working in Manhattan for my dream job. And they told me to give up my job because you're supposed to just rest, rest, rest. I gave up my apartment, moved back in with my parents. That's what I was advised by my neurologist. And so my life changed drastically because of all of that. And that was a real kicker in many, many ways. Yeah. So it was a very, it was a dark ages of MS, but it's certainly like anybody else today, you don't just sit back and take everyone's advice. You also have to listen to your own advice and advocate for yourself, even when there was nothing back then. So, still same thing.
And I guess then, what was that like, you know, back then, you know, in terms of like, what gave you the, I guess, truly the courage to advocate for yourself when people are telling you to, you know, just stay home and rest? What drove you to become, you know, so vocal?
Well, I think that when you're faced with adversity, you really learn what stuff you're made of. And without even thinking of it, I knew that I had to do something, whether that was writing letters to the editor of the local newspapers about what MS was and hoping that there would be more information available and more research available. I started a support group through National for our local support group. And but it was a scary time because our local libraries had old books on MS, which were clearly outdated. Like I said, there was no internet. I knew no one. And, you know, and the advice was different back then, too. I had a second diagnosis. My parents wanted me to get a second opinion. And in Manhattan, and that doctor told me there'd be a cure within 5 years. Well, that's kind of comical.
It is.
In a weird way.
And when I've often commented that my doctor told me the same thing, and I was diagnosed in 97. And so it's interesting that, you know, in 5 years or surely there'll be a diagnosis, and we're so close. And
it's the same. Yeah. And you're the first person that ever told me that their doctor told them the same thing, which is so funny that it's you, Jen. But Time had just come out declaring that. So that was 1986. And then Time magazine came out with, they called it the decade of the brain, which everyone was certain there were going to be so many cures in the 90s for all of these diseases that had, you know, the brain issues in common. And, you know, so there you go, Jen.
Yeah. And I think back when they came out with beta-seron, and I didn't know much about the disease, and I was like, oh my goodness, there's a medication for it. I'm going to be cured. My doctor said 5 years. And that's, you know, the longevity. And Dan's kind of smiling too, that it's just, oh, children.
What was that like then, Kathy? I mean, you're diagnosed in 86 and, you know, you're the brain and we're looking for this. And at that point in time, there were no treatments for the disease. But then, like Jennifer in 97, me in 2000, we had the ABC drugs. You were there when beta-seron first hit the market. What was that like then, and how encouraged was that for you?
Well, so I went 7 years, obviously, without any medications because beta-seron came out in 1993. And so I was I was blessed and grateful to have an excellent nurse practitioner. I don't know if you're familiar with the great June Halper, who was an incredible force to be reckoned with. She was my nurse practitioner, and she put me at the front of the line because there used to be lotteries to get people on the first drugs. And so I thought, oh my God, I've been praying for a dog, and you know, this was just the best thing that could have ever happened in my life. And, you know, I was married, and by then I had a baby in 1992. So when Beta Sarin came out, I thought, oh, this is just going to be the best. And so, unfortunately, I had a lot of side effects on it, and I wasn't on it for that long. And then Avonex came out after that. And again, I had a lot of side effects on that. And then finally, I think it was 1996, I think, when Copaxone came out. And I stayed on that for 22 years. But back then, when the drugs came out, there was almost like a deep sense of relief, because that we had really thought that would be, just like Jen said, oh yes, there's a cure.
Yeah,
this is going to really do so much for my MS. And you know, your hopes were so high. And as we learn over the years, you have to be careful with those hopes, because it doesn't always transpire into what you think it will be.
No.
So,
no. Yeah. And I'm just thinking back, Kathy and Dan, I had one of those moments where I was thinking, oh, that's when Beta Sarin came out. But no, when I was diagnosed, I did have the three ABC drugs for a choice. So then in the late 90s, I don't remember what came out. But that's when I thought, oh, that is a cure. And it was just another disease-modifying treatment. And I suppose that's something Dan and I wanted to ask, and as delicately as possible, and I'm sure you'll get it. But it's like, now that we're older, what do you get excited anymore? Or are you sometimes, Kathy, honestly, I feel jaded, where I'm like, I'm not waiting for a cure. I don't care about that. I want a fix. Do you ever feel that way? Or how do you keep going?
Sure. I mean, the emotional side of MS and the mental health of it is not discussed nearly enough, in my opinion, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of ups and downs that we have to deal with when we pin our hopes on this and we pin our hopes on that. And plus, the information is always changing. But thank goodness, I mean, the recent research coming out, and if it's a great thing for our community, then all the better. But you know, it's like a seesaw of information that comes out that you rely on. Like in the beginning, I was told that I would have so many years less to live than the normal population, the able-bodied population, however you want to word it. So semantic, but.
The non-chronic illness population.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, I did a lot of homework about before I became pregnant, because I wanted to find out about the percentages of children getting, God forbid, but getting MS, you know, passed down from their parents. And there was a very, very, very small percentage, which, as we all know, has changed over the years. So things like that. And so while the information changes, it has good and bad to it. And I just kind of, I mean, I'm 67 now, and I'm reconciled to the idea that I pray that there will be a cure for the next generation. I don't expect to see it in my lifetime. I mean, this year is my 40th year with MS. That's a long run since my diagnosis, I should say. But I just and I do feel jaded a lot of the time, which I never was before. But I slipped into secondary progressive mm-hmm. over the last couple of years. So things change, as we all know, when that happens. So you kind of, if it's possible, learn to take things as they come, mm-hmm. but keep a cautious eye, but keep researching, but never, ever completely give up on hope.
No.
Because without hope, what are any of us worth, you know?
Yeah.
So it's hard. That's where the mental health comes into play, you know?
Yeah. We recently were, Dan and I were watching a online program with Dr. Aaron Boster, and he was talking about not so much holding out for a cure or a fix, but just controlling what you can control. Control your diet, your exercise, your attitude, your sleep, your water intake. Don't keep looking for some magic pill, like control what you can control. And I think that was really good advice. And I imagine that's what sustained you for 40 years, Kathy, is just, you know, doing the best in ways, you know, staying up on research and controlling what you can control.
Right. And that is a big lesson, but an important one. And I agree with Aaron Boster. He's brilliant once again, and that advice that he gave on that webinar is that all we have is what we can control. There will always be things like our MS symptoms that we can't always control, and we know that. Okay, so what can we control, you know? And that's, it's a day-to-day-to-day-to-day thing. And each day, for me, when you wake up and open your eyes, thank God you're there for another day. And then you set an intention for the day. And you do the best to realize that intention. Doesn't always work out, but maybe there's tomorrow, you know? And you do what you can day to day to day. That's all anybody can ever do. So I like that. I like what you just said, that Aaron said, and I think it's great advice for all of us to follow, you know? Yeah, I'm sorry I missed that one.
Yeah, it was really good. And maybe we can, Dan and I can.
Yeah, I'll find the link, because it was one of the MS News and Views from Stuart Slashman.
Yeah.
I mean, right. it was really good. And Boster was, you know, as always, spot on, right?
Right.
And you know, and for everyone listening and stuff, when we find this this webinar that they had with Dr. Boster, we'll provide a link to that. But we'll also provide links in the show notes to Kathy's award-winning blog and just ways that you can connect with her. And I just think it's just incredible. Like, where it goes. And I mean, just thinking like with 4 decades, because I mean, I just passed, you know, I don't want to say I'm counting down the days, but I know then that come, yeah, this year when I hit my birthday in September, that will mark the point where I can officially say I've had MS for over half my life. And, you know, and pushing 3 decades, you're at the 4 decade mark. And the one thing that I've always wondered, now that I'm in my, you know, low pushing mid 50s, you know, there's always the question of how much of like things when my body feels like it's getting worse, is that MS or is that aging? And so, and like with living with MS now since 86, I mean, how do you navigate that sort of thing in terms of determining, well, what's MS and what's just natural part of aging?
Well, I can't say that I can. I really can't say that I can know if something's happening because of one or the other. And actually, when I asked the doctors, they pretty much say the same thing. Because how could you know which one it is? And what does that solve anyway? Mm-hmm. That's why I really started pushing for the last couple of years for more conversations on aging and MS, for more research to go into the aging population. Amen. Because everybody's going to age. Everybody. Mm-hmm. You could be 20 years old and listening to this podcast. You're going to age. So you might as well start listening and thinking about it now. I wish, going back, when I think of coming home from work every day, when I did before my diagnosis and doing Jane, and you guys are young, but doing the Jane Fonda workout every single night on my VCR. And I think that I would really just pass out right now if I even did, you know, 5 minutes of that, or if I could even do that. But it's very difficult to know which is aging and which is MS. And I think it's very important for those discussions. I know that there's been more and more talk about it. I know some different organizations that are putting themselves behind those subjects, and I'm so happy to hear that. But I think that we need even more, because I used to feel that once somebody, say, reached 60, that in some medical communities, we fell off the face of the earth.
Yes.
You know, and that just isn't so, because the over 60 population, for the most part, in the MS community, is still vibrant, still has things to offer, still wants to be part of the community, still wants to accomplish things in their life. And it might look different than they thought it would be, but we use our abilities that we do have left. I hate to say it like that. There's a better way to say that. We use our abilities that we have to realize the goals and the dreams that we think that we can reach. You might have to reorganize it a little and rethink it a little, but you still can do so much for yourself and for the people you love and for the world. So
yeah,
I think that needs to be really talked about. I've been writing about that for quite a while, and I hope that people open their hearts and their minds to that subject. Yeah.
Don't put us out to pasture. We still have so much. And maybe that's where we're ahead of the curve a little, is that this population, we were all young, you know, 30 years ago. And look at what we've done over the course of time, and just step aside, watch us, you know, catch up to us and realize that you need to consider this population, and that you're right, Kathy, everyone is going to get older. So
right. And focus. We're still, I mean, watch us fly, you know, just watch us fly, stand back and watch, because we still are flying, and we will be until the end of our days. And we don't know what that is, but if we feel like, you know, still contributing to the world, why stop us? Why stop giving someone medication because they're of a certain age? That's ageism.
Yes.
And we know that, you know, anecdotally, we've heard that happen, which, you know, really gets me angry. So, I mean, I'm at that point now where I haven't been on a medication for a year, and it makes me very nervous. And I was offered one medication, which also makes me very nervous, this medication. No, I don't want to mention it, but, you know, it's a very scary thing. Our life is all about choices, and life with MS is also all about risk. And we have to make the best decision that we can at the time with the information that we have at the time, and try to age well. Another thing was, I never really took seriously, because at the beginning, nobody talked about exercise and positive thinking, and using complementary therapies and all of that. And I wish that I had that, because now I'm certainly focusing, because I want to age well. I don't want to fall. I don't want to be a burden. I don't, you know, and none of us do. So we do what we can when we can. And if we can't do it one day, that's fine. That's good. And we're still enough, just as we are.
Yes.
But we've got to stay healthy.
Well, I think that's what's so interesting. And I mean, you're can I say? I mean, we all in our own ways are walking the walk. I mean, just in terms you're talking about staying healthy and moving and everything. And as we're talking about the benefit and beauty that this is an audio only podcast, you know, you're talking, well, you just done chair yoga. I mean, that's just like, you know, a testament of doing that, living the life and doing what you can. You're not out running 6 miles and everything. It's just like the yoga, it's the movement that keeps us going.
It's the stretches, it's knowing your body better. It's for me, my balance, well, for many of us, balance is very difficult. And I just read an article on how important that is for longevity, let alone everything else, you know, to balance and keeping your muscles, building muscle, because things like, you know, transferring from a chair to a toilet or to bed or something like that, those are really important as we age, and we need to be focusing on that, whether we do it on our own or through physical therapy, however we can. We have to just try to keep ourselves as strong as possible for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when you talk about balance, you're probably, you know, certainly you're meaning the literal balance, but then I'm also thinking about balance, you know, your the social life, or if you're still working, your family life, you have to put it into balance so that you're not wearing yourself out. You know, you can think when you're in your 20s or your 30s, you're certainly wearing yourself out because that's what you do. But as you're aging, you need to have, you know, Dan and I are more strenuous about sleep and getting rest and exercising. You know, you try and do that, and you have to again, you constantly, that's the name of the game with multiple sclerosis, I feel pretty confident in saying, constantly have to maneuver and renegotiate. It's never the same any day, I don't feel like.
Not any day. And added to that is stress, which when you think of all the things that we've been talking about here, we place stress on ourselves just to keep up with what we need to keep up with, whether it's a social life or our doctor's appointments, plural, or, you know, marriage, or, you know, for me, motherhood and things like that. Although my son's 33 and he doesn't need me like he did when he was three. So,
he still needs you.
Yes, thank goodness. But so the stress burden adds to what we have to deal with during the course of a day. And so, you know, we have to learn how to best manage all of these things. Like you said, Jen, you hit it on the nose. Balance, it has many meanings to it. And one of them is to learn how to balance your stress, your emotions. I've also been doing meditation more often and breath work, which I find very helpful for when I'm stressed. I've had a lot of gut issues over the last couple of years. So I've been doing an app that teaches me, more breath work because of the gut-brain connection. And it's very helpful. So there's a lot going on with all our comorbidities, too. Mm-hmm. And it's so important for us to keep our balance. You know, it's like an umbrella word. You put balance on the top of the chart and you write all the things that you need how to balance. You have a lot of columns, yes. You know? So... Yeah. So how do you do that? Well, the big part of that, I think, is communication. It's just what you guys are doing with this podcast, is communication, mm-hmm. is reaching out and leaning in into one another. Yes. You know? And that's so helpful as we all age. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is about having a community, whether you're living with multiple sclerosis or another chronic illness, or you're just living. I mean, really, Kathy, who is just living? Everybody's got something. So it is to find that communication, find that community, and that helps you navigate and get through.
That's right. And we were talking a little while ago about, you know, the first time we all met, which was, I don't know what year it was, but a long time ago. But we each know that the other is there. I mean, we've kept in touch sporadically, but we know that if something happened, that we could lean into each other and be helpful and be there for each other. And that's a real sense of community. That's a bond that will never be broken.
No.
That's really important for everybody to, because loneliness is an epidemic now, especially in the chronic illness communities. And it's so important for people to, you know, keep in touch with people that are there for them unconditionally.
Yes.
And so you guys are part of my community and always have been, always will be. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And I think about that, you know, when you were diagnosed in 86 and we were in like late 90s and I was diagnosed in 2000, but it's like just how, when we talk about building the community, I don't want to ask, is it easier now to because there is the isolation and the loneliness and stuff still in the, but it's just like that, you know, now that it's 2026 and we have now over 25 disease modifying therapies and we have, you know, the Facebook and all the social media and everything to stay in contact and in touch. I mean, that you know, had lived in New Jersey and now you're in, you know, Carolinas and we're in Michigan and I grew up in Iowa, and just how we have this whole network nationwide. It's gotten easier, but it's still just as challenging to have those kinds of connections. How do you, rationalize that? I mean, just like, was it, do you think it's easier now, like when you're diagnosed with MS, or is it harder because with all the information we now know how much we don't know?
You know, I was thinking about that the other day, because at the beginning, like I said, there was, I didn't know anybody with MS and I had no way of meeting people with MS unless I went to support groups, which didn't last too long because it just wasn't my thing. And it works for a lot of people. And if it works for you, more power to you. I think that's wonderful. But for me, that was the only way to meet anyone. So it was very difficult in the beginning. Now, when the internet came, and I don't know, I guess Facebook was the first one that I really took the dive into. It was different back then because people were so happy to find connection and to be able to build groups. I had a huge group of midlife bloggers. We blogged about all different subjects, but we got very close and we had conventions together and things like that. But I also had that with the MS community. And it was all about connection and all about networking. Well, I think today it's harder again because it's so fast paced between all of the platforms. And in my opinion, it's a lot of it has to do with, you know, now there are influencers and now there is light counts and, you know, how big is your brand and things like that. And everything has changed. I'm not on it, but there's, you know, TikTok and a lot of the other platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I never went on because I just didn't. So, and I think it's a lot harder now to find the network than, let's say, like when we met. It was a whole different time back then of meeting people and connecting and staying in touch and really getting to know one another and helping each other, supporting each other, giving each other ideas or and today I don't find that is necessarily true. I don't see many people my age on the social media networks that I'm on. Now, that's not to say that they're not around. They could be doing some incredible work that I just don't know about. But most of the people are younger than me, and much younger than me, like my younger than my son.
Yeah.
So it's very, I think it's more difficult today. And I wish it wasn't that way. Maybe there'll be another turn at some point where something else will come along, which I'm sure it will. And I hope so, because connection for everyone is so important. You know, there are certain groups that I'm in on Facebook for, like, because I have to be gluten-free, or for my community here in North Carolina. They're very helpful groups. You have a problem, you get so many answers. There's such a sense of community in those groups. And that's what's needed, is that real sense of community, like an Andy Griffith Show kind of thing, where everybody comes together and, you know, and helps each other and loves each other. And since I know that's fiction, but there you have it.
Well, and I
that was a long answer, I know.
But. No, it's but perfect. And I would like to believe that there is support out there and connection. And there are so many groups, and I'm with you, Kathy. I'd like to see it grow and get back to, but you know, maybe we'll never get back to, and it's different from now on. But I'm sure, you know, if you need that support, that you can find. I'm hopeful that everyone can find support, and you know.
Yeah. And I think that you can if you really look for it. I don't want anyone listening here. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Oh, no. Go ahead, because I think you're going to make a great point.
I don't want anyone here that's listening right now to feel that what I'm saying means it's hopeless. It is not hopeless. You can find groups. You can find the people who are your tribe. It's possible. Start your own. Do your own thing. Start a meetup, or start I don't even know, because I don't know the possibilities anymore. But it is out there. Or ask your doctor if they know of any groups, local groups that they've heard are really wonderful. Or, you know, there's so many, or ask one of the societies, or there's so many great MS organizations, not to mention all the great doctors like Dr. Bostra, who has this excellent YouTube channel, or like Stuart Schlossman's MSVs and News. Excellent channels where you really feel a part of it, and you can get your questions answered, and you can, quote, meet people in the chats, and maybe you could start a group from them. I don't want anyone to ever feel hopeless, because that's no such thing. You can reach out to me, which I am more than happy to help anyone, always. That's my mission till the day I die. I know that Jen and Dan feel the same way. That's who we are. And that's, sorry I'm talking to you guys, but I know that's who you are. And yeah, so I wanted to stress that point.
And that was, I knew deep down you had some really great points to make. And Dan's clapping. That was a really good point. And there is such wisdom in that. And we will have some links to you so that people, if they want to reach out, they can connect with you. And of course, people can reach out to us at acoupletakesonms.com, because you're right. I remember being diagnosed, Kathy, when they said, oh, there's 250,000 people living in the United States with MS. And now there's over a million. And it's your tribe is out there. So don't stop looking, and don't get hopeless, and don't feel alone.
So, that's right. Yeah. Never, ever. There's so many good people out there in our community. Mm-hmm. We are a strong community, and we support each other.
Yes.
And, you know.
Yes, we are.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as we talked about a lot, you know, and I really liked what you talked in terms of like the research for aging and MS. And, you know, when I hear and I read you writing things about this on social media and stuff, I'm just thinking, well, this is such an important population. So I guess the question is for those of us who are aging with MS and asking a lot of these kinds of questions, in your, you know, four decades with this, what have you learned that brings you peace and clarity in the middle of it all?
Well, besides my husband and son, of course, because I could never be who I am without them. And aren't I lucky or blessed to be able to say something like that? But I think that I have a sweatshirt that says hope, because I've learned that despite what some of the things we talked about today, there is always, always hope. And I have to hold on to that. And I made a vision board. I hadn't done that in years, in the beginning of January. And I talked to a dear friend of mine, and we were going to do a vision board and put it around two words, joy and hope. Because in this crazy, crazy world, I think every day we should hold on to joy and hope. And then around that, I have like things like nurture yourself, nurture those around you, resilience, because we certainly need that when we're dealing with this disease. And so I've learned that it's very important to try to stay as positive as you can. And it's not toxic positivity. It is not toxic positivity. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because I know when I'm dealing, like I said before, with my gut issues, if I start to feel negative, I start to feel sick. I mean, it actually is a gut-brain thing. And it's the same thing. I mean, I've heard that 80% of people with MS have IBS, like me, which astounded me. So there's a real connection between trying to see a silver lining in everything that happens to us. And I know that some people might be rolling their eyes at that, but I've done well with that. It could be the darkest cloud, but you can find the tiniest thing, the tiniest particle of a silver lining. And that really helps me.
And that's a beautiful sentiment and a wonderful way to kind of, you know, wrap up our conversation. And is there anything, I mean, it's been lovely talking with you, Kathy, and we could go on forever, us old friends sitting around. But is there anything that you want to touch on here at the end or any, I mean, besides that beautiful sentiment that you shared, anything left, anything else that you'd like to talk about?
Well, first of all, I want to say that you two are an inspiration to more people than you know. And your thoughts and your work are reflections of who you are, and you touch us in the deepest part of our souls. And that will serve our community well. I wanted to put that out there because it's the truth.
Well, thank you, Kathy.
The truth.
Well, and again, we learn from the best. I think that we started out, and it's just like, okay, how can we be more like Kathy Chester and what she's doing? And so you inspired us. You made this possible.
Thank you. It's all about paying it forward. So the next course people and the next and the next and the next. Yes. And hopefully someday, like we said, there will be a cure. But like Aaron said, we just take it as it comes, you know. So I just hope that everybody knows that we are in this together, mm-hmm. and we are a strong community. And, you know, I hope that everybody that has listened to us tonight really comes away being inspired and empowered to be their best selves and their own best advocate. I really, truly hope that is what happens.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much, Kathy. And we will have in the show notes, we'll have links to Kathy's blog and more information that we discussed just to help everyone continue moving forward. So Kathy, thank you again for being with us tonight. And until next time, we are A Couple Takes on MS. I'm Dan Digman and I'm walking.
And I'm Jennifer Digman and I'm rolling.
And we are A Couple Takes on MS. Together, we are moving forward. Take care.